And they said to me, they were like, these days, nobody is too small, because tomorrow, the biggest artist in the world could have came out of nowhere. And like, that is like how it works now.
Welcome to the Cloud Machine Podcast, your all-access pass to the music industry. I'm your host, Matt Landry, and every week we immerse you in the music world, uncovering industry insights, offering expert guidance, and exploring the stories that influence the industry. The Cloud Machine Podcast is brought to you by Aites, the innovative creative agency behind some of your favorite live concerts and tours. Want to take your music to the next level? Join our vibrant community on the Aites Network Discord. And with that, let's get started with today's episode. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Cloud Machine Podcast. Today's discussion on production and creativity is crucial for anyone that's looking to navigate and excel in the music industry. It's not just for musicians, artists, and songwriters, but also for producers, collaborators, and anyone who values the art of music, creation, and performance. Joining us to share his expertise is Mickey Brandolino, a very talented producer, musician, and former member of the band Valley. Prior to his departure, Mickey had played a pivotal role in shaping the band's sound and has since embarked on a promising solo production career. With a rich background in songwriting and performance, Mickey has had a unique perspective on the industry and the state of it. He has a good sense of it currently. His experience with Valley and his ongoing solo projects showcase his dedication to his craft and his ability to evolve as an artist. We're thrilled to have him here to discuss his journey, creative process, and what's next on the horizon for him. And I'm very lucky to call him a friend. Hi, Mickey. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? Thank you for having me. I'm stoked.
I'm good. Thanks. It seems like it's been a long time coming. So thank you. Thanks for coming on. Where are you coming to us from today?
I'm in LA. I'm in my new house that there's no artwork up yet, but yesterday I got some gear in, but I literally came here on Monday. So, and now It's Friday.
Yeah. Thanks for taking the time to chat with us today.
Of course. I'm thrilled.
Let's start the podcast that we always start the podcast. I wanted to ask you about your favorite live show experience as a fan ever.
I think the 1975 on their I Like It When You Sleep tour at Bud Stage was like a spiritual moment. I had good people around me. The show was just like that era, something was in the air. I mean, it's every era for them, but something about the live show is just like insane for that. And the production was ridiculous. And I just remember like being so inspired.
Yeah.
And it was an era of Valley where like we were approaching our own headline era, and like, I don't know, it was a good moment. And that record changed my life too. So I would probably have to say, I'll call that number one.
You've seen him multiple times. What sort of made that one, let's say, maybe not necessarily better, but what stands out from that performance compared to, let's say, like the Cool House show or like the
Cool House was sick. That was one. Friend group. Like that was like, yeah, that was also another great memory, but it was honestly, it was, If I Believe You, the song, when the gospel happens and all of the towers lit up, I like Jesus came down from the sky and was talking to me. I'm not even religious. It was one of those moments where I was like, holy shit. Like,
yeah,
this, I don't know. My serotonin went through the roof in that moment. And I think I cried actually. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
For that moment.
Jeez. Yeah. There's a few when you think about performances, you definitely think about like certain songs, you know? And If I Believe You for you. Yeah. That's a great moment. I mean, there's so many moments that I think about, like, I'm thinking of some of my favorite performances. Like there's some song specific ones. Like the first time I saw John Mayer and he started with Waiting on the World to Change. Like that's just because it was the first song, but also Cambo just like, exactly.
I was up there in my thoughts. Cause I also saw him at Bud Stage.
At Bud Stage.
And I was front row. I was like literally the front row. And there were like some moments. But
crazy.
Yeah, I think 975 takes it. Sorry, John.
No, it's great. Want to ask you, for those that don't know you, some listeners that listen to the podcast don't know Mickey Brandolino. What are some of the projects that would best represent your work?
Best represent my work.
For them to, like, you know, go check it out maybe after they're listening to this, or
I would say there's a new song that just came out by this artist named Miko that I'm executive producing, and he's so sick, so talented. Song called Homesick. And his next single, I think, also partly represents, but it's not out yet, so I can't say it. right. A lot of the Elio tracks, like Charger, I think, and When You Saw Love, like I put a lot of things in there that were like new for me that I feel like I learned while making those records and kind of became a part of my thing. And then with Valley, I would say, I think Have a Good Summer Without Me.
Oh yeah.
Really represents the blend of my taste, like between organic things and like things that hit in pop music. And like, yeah, I think that song is really special. And everyone in the band like gave a really important piece to that song, and the co-writers we worked with on that. But I feel like, it's a good representation of what I love to do is that song as well. Yeah.
How did you, I mean, this is a very broad and probably a long-winded answer, but how did you find like the sounds that represent you? Like, how did you find your sound?
Yeah, I think about this a lot, actually, because it's always changing a little bit. And sometimes I try and, like, I like to learn from other producers a lot. Like, if I hear a song and I'm like, it's mostly just things I get obsessed with. So it's like, when I found, I don't know why I'm referencing the 975 again, but it's like every band person ever. But,
please.
When I found the 975, like I just made a bunch of fake 1975 songs that sucked, but I learned like the pieces that I was obsessed with, you know what I mean? Like the kick snares. I didn't know how to get a snare like that. So I would just like drown a snare in reverb and it would sound terrible. And I was like, okay, so how do I get this sound?
Right.
And then you use it in other contexts. So then it's like, okay, this sound, but with this artist, it doesn't really make sense. But now there's this new unique twist to this genre. And it's like, I think it's just whatever it's an accumulation of all of your obsessions.
Yes.
So, and then, I think about it all the time because I'm like, I don't think, I'm going to do like my sound. I just do what I'm hearing in my head and that's my sound. So it's like my sound. And then you obviously, you're working with artists, so you have to do their sound.
Yes.
But inevitably, you're going to do it through your lens. So then you're like, I guess that's how you get your sound. But accumulation of obsessions, I guess, and learning how to do that for yourself. And then you accidentally do a new thing. And that's like kind of how everyone builds their own.
And you add it to your bag kind of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. You mentioned something about like, you know, working with different artists and like them having their own sound, but sort of being aware that you also have your own thing going on. Is it easy to let's say mix your palettes together? Like, how have you found that, you know, working with, you know, now a lot of different people? You know, sometimes one day you're working with another person and then the next you're working on a completely different record, completely different genre of music. How have you sort of navigated that? And is there a moment like in the morning where you have to be like, okay, let's forget like yesterday, let's forget the song?
Yeah, I definitely do get into like, I do get hyper fixated on like vibes. So it's actually it's like important to have, I actually, that's what I love about being a producer. And one of the main reasons it like, you know, became a thing for me is because like, I will get obsessed with a certain sound for like 2 weeks and I'll be like so in on it, but then I'll go into a session the next day and it'll be like an R&B session. And it's like totally different than what I was doing like house stuff for like a week. And all of a sudden I have this like new obsession with like R&B. And then I go into like this like indie record. And now from the last 2 weeks, I bring in these different things that I've been obsessed with. So I take a moment every morning, but not for to like get rid of, I don't know how to answer the question. I feel like,
yeah, it's almost like you don't necessarily get rid of it. It's just time to move on, but you can reflect it and you could pull it out kind of thing.
And it actually crosses over. I think I actually bring it into every session.
Yes.
That's a good thing, I think.
Yeah, well, it just speaks to your bag too.
Yeah, to
and
my just bag.
Like, yeah. And your palate and just like how every experience you're learning from every experience and can or cannot, like you can or choose not to take it to the next session.
Yeah, exactly. You've left me with something to think about now. Now I'm going to analyze it in a good way. I got to figure that out. Cause I think I just bring like, I'm doing an alt record. Okay. Now I'm going to make these like hip hop tracks. And like all of a sudden there's like guitar on the hip hop track. But yeah. I feel like it's a good thing. I feel like it's cool.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that I've left you with something to think about. Second question. we do a segment on the podcast, this quote segment last year was, it's Erykah Badu's quote talking about how, like basically comparing the music art as an art form to the music industry and how they're the same or how they're different and different perspectives on that. This year we're doing Joni Mitchell's, quote from 2004, which is 20 years ago, just to put it in context. She says, yeah. I heard someone from the music business saying that they are no longer looking for talent. They want people with a certain look and a willingness to cooperate. I'll repeat it again. And I have to highlight that this is not her saying this, but it's someone from the music industry that she heard saying that they are no longer looking for talent. They want people with a certain look and a willingness to cooperate. So Mickey, I just wanted to know your first instincts on this, this quote.
I have opinions. Sure. I have strong,
please.
I think whoever said that either got fired or is a jaded prick who, imagine it's like my A&R. Okay. Yeah. This podcast comes out and someone I know who said that 20 years ago. Or they're like jaded and they are probably like not going to have any much more success in their time because they heard somebody say that. And that, but whoever said it, I think it's stupid and not true because I could go down a rabbit hole about this type of thing, but like there are so many factors that matter for success, 1000%. Like,
yeah,
timing is a massive one. Like when people say, oh, it's just the song and it's going to be successful, song comes first, 1000%, but there's a million factors, you know, like there's like your timing, there's your promotion, there's your team, there is everything, but yes, all those things none of that matters if the song is bad. You know what I mean? So to say that they're not looking for that, I'm like, I can't think of a song that isn't good to at least a group of people that has done well. Like they're all good songs. You know what I mean? Like I haven't heard a song that is like literally atrocious or just so whatever and bad that's become really successful, at least to a group of people. Like it might not be my thing. It might not be your thing, but to somebody it is. So I feel like maybe that's just someone not seeing a vision or someone who's just like jaded and doesn't know what's up. That's my opinion.
Yeah. And you bring in something or you remind me of something that we've been hearing a lot over the past like few years, which is industry plant. That
oh,
thing,
or you opinions on that shit. Yeah. Bullshit. I'm sorry. I don't know if I'm allowed to swear.
You are allowed to swear. I just haven't had some conversations recently as well. You hear it on, or you see it rather like in comments or, you know, you hear it maybe in conversations that people that are maybe jealous of this person that's getting 100%. Success.
Here's my opinion on that.
Please.
If you're interested.
Yes.
I understand. Cause it ties into the Nepo baby thing. I have multiple opinions on this as well. What I do agree with is I understand the fact that if somebody is a Nepo baby and or has fallen into amazing connections with passionate people who are successful or have lots of money or whatever, your opportunity where you start is higher, 100%. Like you might have access to a Billboard article or a Spotify playlist or this or that before somebody who is struggling to get out of their hometown in the middle of nowhere because they don't have money and they have whatever, like an abusive family or like situations that are much harder. Like everybody starts at a different place. And I think as long as the people who are getting those opportunities can acknowledge that, and if they get asked about it, like they can accept that that is the reality. It's happened for me as well. I came from a family that was supportive of my music career and let me record records in their basement and this and that. Like if I had to go out and find a place and was whatever, if I moved out when I was like 17 years old and had to do all this, like it would take me longer. I would probably like have a harder time with motivation, but like I had supportive parents and it's like, so I start here or whatever and versus somebody else. So that part I completely acknowledge about like nepotism and stuff. And I understand the part where I like that really irritates me is that like the Nepo babies that are really talented and it's like, right. It might've just taken them a couple more years, but they still would have done it because they're motivated. They're talented. Their music is great. Like there's some of my favorite artists are Nepo babies and I'm like grateful that they exist. For sure, they started a little bit easier than other people as far as access to resources goes.
Yeah.
But it doesn't discount their talent. And there are many a Nepo babies that are not talented and you've never heard of them. And like a lot of people in the industry know a lot of them and it's could be because either they don't have the motivation and the drive and because you have money, like a lot of people signed to labels have a lot of money, but it doesn't mean you're going to be successful, right? Like the music, that's why I was saying it comes first and then everything after helps it, but nothing yes. exists without the really good music. And so I'm just like industry plant, like if something yeah. sucks, it's not going to do well, period.
Right. Right.
Like maybe heavily supported by the industry because it's great. Sure. Yeah. But like, let's, you know, you can polish a turd. It's still a turd. Like it's an old saying. It just is what it is. I think it's really stupid personally, but
yeah. Each their own. I want to touch on something that you said here, in regards to, you know, it's hard to, especially now in the music industry where the success of somebody is so, impacted by how the audience feels about it, because right now it's all TikTok, it's all audience likes and comments and stuff. So it's not like the labels trying to push these people. It's actually the audience members that are choosing who's on top of the game right now. And it's crazy. I feel like there's less potential for industry plants now more than ever.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of just like the people choose.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like.
Hmm. And wanted to talk about, you were saying connections and stuff in regards to industry plants and they sort of start out with more connections. But at the end of the day, I just want to say about specifically about connections is that the industry is all based around connections. So everybody has to make those connections at the end of the day anyway. But it's just weird to associate industry plant with connections, because everybody has to have connections in the industry anyway. You don't necessarily get anywhere without connections anymore.
I don't know if anyone ever has gotten anywhere without connections. You know, that's another, like, I think myth that when I talk to people who are just starting out, they're like, oh, but I want to do it on my own. I'm like, there's nobody in the world who's done it on their own. Everything's a collaboration. Like the whole point is to do it with people, you know?
Yes.
Whether it's your team or musical collaborators, you know, it's like, or friends, like, it's just like people is the center of all of it, you know? So don't do it on your own.
do it with people. And I recognize that, you know, some people have made connections more easily than others because they're in certain circles. But at the end of the day, you still have to nurture those connections, because, you know, it won't be the first time you meet someone that they'll bring you into their circle or their label or whatever.
Of course.
100%, anyway, where do you think the industry is going? Very general question. You know, now being in LA, now being in the music industry for so long, are you seeing some new developments in the industry that you're interested in particularly that maybe the general public hasn't seen yet?
I think this is like might be a hot take because of a lot of the opposite is also happening, but I think people are becoming more organic. Like,
right.
I think people are getting sick of, it's almost like the 2000s happened again, where like after like the 2000s got really what some people would view as like artificial, or like people were getting like angry about auto-tune and all these things. Then like the singer-songwriter folk thing like exploded right after that. And I feel like it's sort of happened again, but now because of TikTok and Spotify and all the things, it's like everybody listens to every genre of music. But I feel like with AI exploding and all these things, I think a lot of people are, which honestly, I'm a supporter of AI as a tool. Like, I'm not talking down on it. I'm just saying, I think a lot of people are going back to like, let's try and make this record without auto-tune. Like, let's incorporate these acoustic guitars on top of this. Like, I don't know how Fred Again does it as well. It's like, it sounds organic, but it's a dance song. Like, I feel like a lot of organic elements to like the way we do business, to the way we make music, to our networking. Like, it's, I feel like people are wanting to get back to basics a little bit is the vibe I'm getting. A lot of people are getting sick of like artificial things.
Right.
Yeah.
But while using artificial things.
Yeah. It's almost like using it as a tool. Yeah.
Yes.
It's
weird. Yeah, yeah.
Even with food. Like, I've noticed like so many people who, because I'm like, I care a lot about my health, and I have been on this like wave for the last like, I don't know, maybe year of like trying to cut out things that are just artificial. Like, I realized how much better I felt when I started just eating like groceries and not, because I mean, I toured for years, so it's like I would eat out three times a day every day for like half the year, and it's like crazy on your body.
Yeah,
just energy and brain and like even like your happiness, like food affects it, you know what I mean? And so like people who I know who like historically have never cared about those things are like, yeah, I'm like trying not to eat like this processed food or this. Like, I feel like it's like overarching in life, I've noticed. Maybe it's the age I'm at and all my friends, like maybe it's that, I don't know.
sure. No, but I agree in regards to like life. And just I feel like we're over the like over consumption period, and we're going a little bit back to basics while utilizing some new technology. It's weird. Yeah. It feels like, and I wrote down here, there's like more room for it. You compared right now to like the 2000s or right after the 2000s. It's like there's so many avenues right now for consumption in regards to the music industry, that there is still room for the Charlie XCXs that are just blasting you with auto-tune, but there's room for,
oh my God. Sorry. Finish your.
I was just thinking like, while Charlie is being her authentic self, she's blasting auto-tune in your face, but you could tie ties to somebody like a McGee that's doing all analog, all stuff like that. Or like I know you're a fan, like the Ryan Beatty stuff. It's all just acoustic, or, all, you know, there's so many people that we could talk about, but there's
and
room
they're all
right
fans
now.
Of each other,
exactly.
Know, so sick.
Yes. Yes. And, so it's like, go ahead. Sorry.
No, you go. I keep interrupting you. Sorry. I'm so excited.
Well, no, I actually, didn't really have much to add just in regards to it, but I agree in regards to like, they're all fans of each other and everybody can live in the same sort of space while not stepping on each other's toes. But in a way it's like, there's more room for it now.
Totally. Which is so great. And there's this song on Charlie's record about like thinking about getting pregnant and she doesn't use any auto-tune. And it's so cool. Cause like, and then it goes right into like a bop with like straight auto-tune. And it's so cool because it's like, she's talking about this thing that is like not like, I don't know a single song. I don't know like a pregnancy pop song. Like, it's sick. And she does it so authentically and so beautifully and tastefully. And it's like no auto tune. And like the whole thing is about like how she thinks about it all the time. And it's like so organic. And I was like, it's so refreshing on that record and in pop music in general. I thought that was such a cool move, and like ties back to my point about people just kind of going back to like the almost the point of life, like just the basic, like simple life, in especially in North America, where we live, I think, too fast in general.
Yeah, I completely agree. I could talk about that forever, honestly. But I want to move on to the real questions. I wanted to ask you about how you started your music journey.
Oh, wow. How I started my music journey.
Like pre-band, just like maybe at home. Yeah, there you go.
That, like, my brother wanted to play drums, I think, drums or guitar after that. And then he started playing guitar. And then I was like, I want to play guitar. I always loved music. Like my family, you know, we listen to music every night during dinner.
Yeah.
Dad listened to a lot of Motown and Gypsy Kings and like a lot of just really cool music that I was very grateful to be raised on. And then, yeah, I just like got really into classic rock when I was like 10, of course. Every boy has that that moment. And then all the whole Green Day, Sum 41 thing. And then, so I really wanted to learn like guitar and drums and like band instruments and write songs and all that kind of stuff. So I was always intrigued, but I was never good at it. And then in high school, my music taste diversified a lot because I just made new friends and they showed me hip hop and they showed me like Never Shout Never, like kind of like cutesy acoustic stuff. Like the width was quite a lot from all these different friend groups. So I was also a skater my whole life. So my friends were like really into all different. There's like, I feel like skateboarding has been like a big part of culture.
Yes.
From like fashion to music to like just vibes in general. Like you can always like find it in basketball and skateboarding, you know? And those were my two favorite sports. So I feel like my friends had very like different tastes in music, even within the skate community. Like some people were very hip hop, some people were very psychedelic rock, and some people were like Jack Johnson skaters. So there was like all these different vibes. And like, I learned a lot of, you know, cause I wanted to be like a cool 11-year-old. So I would learn all this different music that my friends liked, but it was all of them. So I don't know. I diversified, I guess, my music taste then. And then, Kara and I started like an acoustic duo thing in high school.
Okay.
And we were writing songs and like kind of performing coffee house type things. And I guess right before that, I had like been learning how to record on this program called Mixcraft. And it was terrible, but it was on like my PC. It was on my like IBM MacBook.
There you go.
Or whatever. And it was really bad, honestly. Like, it's not even something to note because the music was just so bad. And then when Karen and I started taking music seriously, then we like started to rent out studios to record. And that's when we met Rob and Alex by accident.
Yes.
And we got booked. And the story goes from there. We just essentially started a band. We started hanging out all the time, writing music all the time. And then the band started.
Mm-hmm.
And the music was like not great back then either. But we kept learning, kept pushing. And they were also a massive part of like my music taste growing.
Right.
Because Rob and Alex were my first friends that liked Tokyo Police Club, the Arkells, Colorado, because no one at my high school knew or liked like indie rock. And
right, they were Canada specifically.
Yeah, from specifically Canadian. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they were the first guys I met that like liked it as well. And I was like over the moon because I was like, oh my God, like someone gets my music, whatever. And
because
at the time they were like the Arkells now, obviously everyone knows, but at the time, like they were just a local band. So people didn't really know them. And so I was really stoked. And then that's when they introduced me to like Bon Iver and honestly Coldplay. Like I only knew the Coldplay hits. Like I was like really behind on things. Rob showed me John Mayer. Like I didn't even know John Mayer. And right. that changed my life too. Like classic guitar guy shit. But yeah. And then
fantastic.
I went to school for audio engineering. And that's when I really put the work in to get good at producing. And I wasn't for a while, but that's like really when the journey I think began, because I was like, let's just produce the band. Like I'll just produce the band because then we don't need to pay for studio time because we couldn't afford it.
Right.
So we started recording everything in my parents' basement. It wasn't great. Like it was okay, but it made like small waves within the Toronto scene. Like we started getting a lot of New Music Friday with Swim and like a lot of, what's the thing on Mondays? It's like where they curate to your, I forget what it's called, but anyway, we started getting like a ton of playlisting on Swim and it was like a lot of motivation. There was a point where, you know, the song was getting like 40,000 streams a day and we were like, oh my God, so this is like real, like we could actually be a real band.
Right.
And then from there, like every record we had a song or two that kind of went crazy on streaming for where we were at. Like it was the next step.
Yeah.
And from there, I really just put my mind to like nothing but producing as far as music goes. Like I was really like, okay, we need to make records. And I felt like it was sort of my responsibility to get it to the finish line and get it to the mixing engineer. And I was like, so I need to figure it out. Like if Rob is like, oh, we need this guitar tone here. I'm like, okay, I need to figure out how to do that. Like, right. I don't know how to do that. So then that I think was one of the most integral things in being in the band and being where I am now is like, they really pushed me as a producer because none of us knew how to produce or get the sounds that we wanted in our head. And so I just was experimenting for 6 years and being pushed to like, oh, these drums need to sound like bigger, like this or like that. And I'm like, all right, let's figure it out. I don't know how to do it. And then you'd figure it out. And then, you know, you just get better and better and better as you do things. There was also, I'm rambling right now, but I'm trying
Please.
To explain.
This is great.
When the band first started, I was one of the lead singers and we had a record that's right. no longer on the internet. Yeah, it's terrible. Don't go listen to it.
Okay.
But there was a record that's like no longer exists where like I was singing lead for a bunch of the stuff. And then I specifically remember the moment we were in the basement and we were in like rehearsal. And I was like, guys, I think I just shouldn't sing anymore. I think it should just be Kara and Rob. And they were like, are you sure? And I was like, yeah, like, why are there three lead singers? And also I lose my voice every show.
Right.
And also I don't really enjoy it. Like I want to just like produce, I'll just produce the band and be the guitar player. And they were like, okay. And then like literally like that, we became a bigger band. And I was like, okay, great lesson.
Yeah.
Here, you go to the side, do what you're good at. And like overnight we were a better, bigger band. So it's like, it was a good lesson.
Fantastic. I want to ask you a general question. You touched on it a little bit, but how did your time with Valley shape you as a musician and influence your career path?
I feel like I've said 50% of it, but I would say the other half is probably like, yeah, I think it's crazy. I think I'm at the perfect moment in my life to be a producer because I think I have been producing enough albums, EPs, singles, and then also while being in the band, producing like Elio stuff or Conan or Johnny Orlando, whatever, like whatever, all the other things.
Yeah.
And Mika, I got the experience of like being able to try out these different genres in like a safe space almost, and also constantly have a schedule of like being pushed. Like,
right.
I think if I had not been in the band and I wanted to be a producer at 20, for my path at least, and I'm not saying this for everybody, but for my specific path, like, I don't know if I would be as like at the level that I am now as far as skill goes, because I made so much music with Valley and with Elio, like every record, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so, yeah. And that was because we had a schedule and we had to get it done. And because.
Yes. Outside, you know, pressures. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And that's great. Whereas I feel like if I was just kind of doing sessions, like, I don't think I would have pushed myself that as hard, which is like, for all the people who are trying to be producers right now, like, you just have to make so much music, and like, it's super fun. I loved doing it and I still love doing it, but I'm in an era now where I'm pushing myself, and like, my manager and I are like filling my calendar, and I am very, very busy, but it's like, there's nobody else. It's just me. And so I'm realizing if I was 20, I don't think I would have pushed myself like I am now. Cause I think I've learned how to push from working on other people's records with like timelines and stuff, which you don't necessarily always get the opportunity to do when you're young. Usually it's like you're doing sessions and maybe the song will come out. And then once the song is maybe coming out, then there's a schedule.
Yes.
Whereas for me, it's like, all right, we need a 12 song record. Let's go write 40 songs and then have everything produced in a month. And I'm like, holy shit. Okay. Like, let's go.
Right. So
it definitely, and then same thing with Elio, like she would come with, you know, a whole record worth of songs and their demos, and we would finish them together, and I'd have to figure out, you know, what, like with her, but like what gear we're renting and where we're going to do this. And is this mic going to work? And, like, okay, I'm like, we're going to Melodyne these things, but we're going to auto-tune these ones. And I don't know, like, there's a lot of like the big boy planning stuff that you're forced to do when you work with people. And I got to do it in a very safe space with like friends that were very supportive and a team that was working for me. So yes. It's kind of, I don't know.
Yeah.
I was very lucky. I was very, very, very lucky to be where I am. And now I'm in LA doing my thing as somebody who's been an artist, who's been on record labels, publishing, lawyers, agents, toured the world, slept on motel floors, been in vans, done buses, done arenas, played a stadium. Like, I've done all the things that are like, maybe not to the level that a lot of the artists I'm going to work with, but like, I can empathize in the room and in the process of making an album, of like being on the other side of the glass.
Yes.
So that is probably the most valuable thing that I've gotten from all the years of like being in Valley to transferring into being a producer. Yeah.
It's a fantastic answer. Another general one. What were some of the most memorable experiences while being a part of the group and honestly, your Toronto era?
My Toronto era. Ugh, I love Toronto so much. I have like more love for Toronto now than I've ever had. But I would say the Asia tour was like one of the highlights of my life for sure. I think there was just something in the air. That's so ironic. That was my subconscious. I love that. That's funny. No, I don't know what it was. It was being in Asia. The fans were incredible. It was the first time, like, yes. I think I felt the magnitude of what our music had done for people. Like, it was the first time I was like, whoa, like, this really like exists in people's lives, like as a thing. So, and the fans were so grateful and just so kind. Like it's a different thing than when you land in Ohio, you know, it's just a different vibe. Sure.
Well, and you have fans meeting you at the airport. Like it's completely different. Like,
dude, the gate agents were crying, like holding signs. It was insane. I have a video of gate agents crying with a sign, and I signed our boarding pass and gave it to them. Like they're so grateful. It was crazy. And very respectful too, with like even the way they lined up to speak to us, like they really cared, you know. Anyway,
yeah,
that was really great. It was just a great experience. And then I would say, like, the days of meeting Rob and Alex with Kara for like the just that era was like really beautiful, like fresh and new. And I knew, again, something was in the air. I knew that there was something like something sparkly there. There's something really special about the synergy between all of us that I knew was going to be bigger than, you know, the sum of all its parts. And then really loved making the Maybe album. I think the trip where we wrote the song like 1999 was really great too. It was like, we're locked up in a house in the pandemic. And like, we watched the Michael Jordan documentary.
Yes.
And got obsessed with basketball because there was like a basketball net at the Airbnb. So we just, every break would play ball. And I was like, my childhood, it was great. Yeah. That was, other than like the pandemic stressing me to my core, the actual, like, there were good moments.
Yeah.
Memorable. Yeah.
Fantastic. I wanted to move on from this and talk about specifically about your creative process. Can you walk us through your songwriting and producing process, and how do you approach creating a new song from scratch? Maybe, you know, with let's say a client, like an upcoming client. How would that go?
100%. I'm just gonna turn my air conditioning on. You can cut that out.
Please.
I'm like sweating. It's like I turned it off for the noise, but I don't think it'll be that noisy. We'll find out. Or maybe this is the most exciting.
Yeah, this might be the intro.
Yeah. AC. Okay. My process. Well, I have a few. I would say my nature is I always write songs. Like I have a very hard time sitting down and being like, okay, it's time to write a song. Like by myself, I just can't do it.
Right.
But I write all day on my, like if I'm in the shower, I always write. If I'm on a walk, I always write. If I'm like doing the dishes, if I'm doing anything that like my conscious brain is distracted, that's when I write. And as soon as I get the idea, if I sit down, then I could finish the whole song in a second.
Right.
But it really is like what Rick Rubin talks about, where it's like channeling the universe type of shit. It's like your subconscious really does write most of the things. And then your conscious mind edits it till it's palatable and great. But like, I find my favorite songs that I've ever written or that have made it to a writing room or whatever, they're always just when I'm doing something dumb. And that's for me personally. But then if I'm working like with, you know, if I'm doing a session, that's when we write down and write a song. So sit down and write a song. and for that, I like to start, I think most people do this, but like, I definitely, there's always the awkward moment of like, okay, so let's write a song from scratch. And it's like, it's always better when you just like sit there and talk and hang out, go on a walk, get coffee, talk about things. And in my mind or literally on my phone, I will be like writing down things that the artist is saying or talking about. Like you kind of just need to get into a mode where you create a space for the artist where they can be vulnerable and just talk about their life and hang out, and you're sort of mining for emotions, you know what I mean? And things to talk about, whether it's happy or sad or angry or confused or whatever is sort of happening.
Yeah.
And then also kind of catch a vibe of like tempo or genre of like, are you trying to make a dance song today? Like, how are you feeling? Like, are we writing a sad one, whatever? And then also you sort of need to suss out the vibe of like how they typically like to work. Cause a lot of times it's just playing around on an instrument till like a chord progression strikes an idea, or maybe sometimes it's scrolling through song titles. And it honestly is different. Every single session, it's different. And it depends on who's in the room and who all brings what energies and ideas.
Yeah.
And some days you end up with nothing. I hate those days, but at the same time, I'm getting a lot better at just being like, we just got to hang out and that's cool. And then other days it happens and like they walk in and they're like, I have this idea, this is going crazy, blah, blah, blah. And you just like got to get going.
Right.
And then other days it's hanging out for 3 hours and then writing a song in another couple hours. And then I'll spend the rest of the night sort of producing it out. And yeah, so it's really different every single day.
Yeah. Is there yeah. one that you remember that's like that comes to mind when I say like a unique, like just process where it was like you wrote the song in, you know, X amount of times or I mean, not even that, I guess. Is there one that comes to mind when I say like a unique time that has only happened like once? Because I know there's so many songs that have been written and so many songs that have made records, but some that haven't, you know?
Yeah. Hmm. There's definitely like weird ones that have never come out that just sit in my voice notes. But
I'm sure your voice notes are kind of wild.
Oh, they're crazy. There's like, it's like waking up at 2 a.m. and you're like, and you're like mumbling into it. Yeah. And you're like, listen the next morning. And you're like, that was a hit in my brain at 2 a.m. when I woke up. I think it was really interesting how like 1999 was created because it was like,
sure,
it was like the hardest day. Like we were writing with Charlie Adams and our friend from the band Knightley, Jonathan, and we had cycled through like 3 or 4 ideas and written half of 3 or 4 songs, and they were all like whatever songs. And then we were going to stop for the day. And then we were like, why don't we just put 30 minutes? We've said this in interviews, but like, we were like, why don't we just put 30 minutes on the clock? Or I think it was like 10 minutes and just mute because we were on Zoom. And like, let's just come back with a couple ideas and see if we like anything. And then Jonathan came back with the melody for 1999. And I think If You Want to Come Over, those lyrics.
Right.
And then we all freaked out and we were like, there's something really special there. And then it was just like maybe an hour. We wrote the whole thing. And so
it's crazy. Yeah.
So for that one, you're like, did we write the song quickly or did it take us 8 hours of mining?
Yes.
A bunch of bad songs. You know what I mean? Like it's one of those interesting ones where I don't know. So that definitely, that has happened a few times. That kind of happened with the latest Miko single that we released. Like we kind of had, it was a slower start. And then once the idea was there, it was like, boom, the whole thing's written.
Right.
But that's like the, spiritual writing, you know?
Yeah. You can definitely argue that once you open the door and once you, until you leave the door, it's the whole, the songwriting process is the entire time for sure.
It's so crazy.
Fantastic. I want to ask you about the rise of like streaming and digital platforms and social media and stuff. How do you think the music industry has evolved over the past few years, and how has it affected the way you produce, or has it affected the way you produce?
I think it did for a second.
Sure.
Actually, I think TikTok did for a second, and I quickly caught myself because you start to like, while you're writing, this thing happens like when you're an artist where like as you're writing the song, you're seeing the music video and seeing it live. You're seeing it live, and it's all a part of the culture of your artistry. But what ended up happening was like now TikTok is a thing, and I said that like a literal boomer. I was like, now TikTok. But now, so then you become like, when it first started becoming a thing, you'd be like, oh yeah, and that would be so sick for this TikTok.
Right.
And then I was like, whoa, we got to slow down here. Like, I'm such a believer of moving with the times. Like when AI started going crazy, I was like, I definitely don't want it to kill everybody, but this is great. We have a new tool. You know, like I'm very much like, it's going to happen. You could fight it or you could get on board.
Yes.
But with like the creation of music, I don't know if I can get behind like, let's write that because it would be good for TikTok. Like I don't like it. I don't like that idea at all. And it kind of got in my head for a second. But as far as streaming goes, I don't think it's changed the way I produce other than me finding really cool new music. Like,
right. It's aided. Anything, yeah.
Yeah. I think it's helped actually, because this is the whole world exists on Spotify, and you can end up on some like weird corners of Spotify where you find really crazy music. Yeah. And, I found a lot of things that I wouldn't even know the name of, but like I got obsessed with for a week, and it's like this really obscure genre of something, and it makes its way into like pop songs that I'm writing. And right. So yeah, I feel like it's helped. It definitely like creates this anxiety around releases, because you're like, I can see how many people are listening. I can see like in this moment, oh, there's 500 people listening right now.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool. We got 80,000 streams on the first day. Like, okay, next song, let's try and get 100,000, you know, it's like,
yes.
It can get very political. But I think during the creation process, I am very zoned in on the moment of like what I am enjoying or not enjoying while making it.
Yeah.
And I don't typically think past the session anymore. Now I'm just like, do I like this or do I not like this? And that's it.
That's fantastic. You bring up something that's interesting. It feels like, and I say myself, years ago, let's say like a Michael Jackson or somebody wasn't going online because, well, first of all, there wasn't an online, but going to see like his like daily, hourly to the minute live streams. It feels like now there's like, it's almost like the artist is so empowered that they're also like the artist is also their own manager now, or they can, if they wanted to, they can go see those metrics and go see those analytics and go see all these things.
As an artist, like it's so dangerous. It's such a great tool, but it's like, as artists, we're not like known for having like good boundaries with ourselves and like good mental health.
Like,
there's a learning curve to like just having it be a tool. You know, there's a lot of things that could destroy you. So
sure. Yeah.
It's kind of tough. Also, I saw this hilarious tweet that was like, Michael Jackson literally could have written Thriller and it would have done nothing if he didn't go, "Hey guys, is this the song of the summer?" and start dancing. And I was like, that is so funny. Like, you literally write Thriller and like he would have to be on TikTok. Like, what?
But isn't that crazy?
If he was releasing it now, like,
yes.
Yeah. Wild.
It's so insane. You talk about things and I just wanted to talk to you about some challenges now. What are some of the challenges you face in the music industry and how have you overcome them? Very, very, very general question. Thinking about the listeners who listen, you know, it's the things to look out for.
Yeah. I have a few thoughts. What are like the listeners? I wish I knew more about your listeners so I can know which one to sort of go on about. Do you think it's mostly like industry people or just like fans or?
Yeah. Typically the listener of the Cloud Machine podcast are just music industry fans in general, but also, there's a lot of artists. There's a lot of people that are just starting out in the industry. There's a lot of people that are tuning in sometimes because of like guest specific episodes, like some of your people that may have been following you or some friends and family or things like that. Maybe we'll tune in. But generally just music industry fans in general that wants to get a peek behind the curtain.
Right. Okay. I think one that comes to mind is how to work with a team. Like, I think it is so easy to get lost when you have people working with and for you, because how do I put this gently? Because I have no shade towards any team members that I've ever had, they're actually all incredible. It's more of like a inevitable thing that happens if you don't, if you don't know. And if you're a certain personality type, it's like, you trust that these people have your best interest in mind, and 9 times out of 10, they do. Like, they, it's not easy to manage people. You don't make a lot of money at first. It's a big investment. Like,
yes,
typically do want the best for you and the best for whatever. But this thing happens where it's like, you start to lose your own vision because other people are so excited and invested in your career that it's like, there's so many opinions. Like, I guess that's where I'm trying to go. And they all mean well, but if you do not find a way to like block out everybody's thoughts and opinions, and this is something I struggled with specifically because I was such a people pleaser, that it's like, a part of it is it, you feel like you want to like impress your team and you want to give back to them. Like, you want to have success so they can have success because they've been working so hard for you for nothing for years. You know what I mean? So it's like, there's this thing that happens where like you start to lose, and I see it with artists all the time, you start to lose like your own vision, and you need to remember like why they wanted to work with you in the first place when you had no other opinions. You know, it was like, it was your vision, and like you, without you as the artist or the producer or the whoever's working for you, whatever you are, is like, without your vision, all of it sort of doesn't matter. And obviously be open and sensitive to people's thoughts and opinions, because a lot of times that's where you learn and get better yourself, but it can't mean that you lose your vision and your sense of reality and your gut and your whatever. And so I think just a huge challenge in this industry is that the opinions are like everywhere. It's insane. Like, it's everywhere you look, there's an opinion. And if you're somebody who struggles with like people pleasing or with just trying to manage all of these people, like, you have to remember to put yourself first always. And something that like I started doing because of Charlotte is like, this is something she did when we would work together, because our opinions were very important to each other just by nature. And like, we both really trust our taste and like whatever. And, but it's like, come up with your opinion before showing anybody anything. So it's like, I would, if I made a song, I'll listen to it and I'll like even write down my thoughts and my opinions and like be able to reference that after I show people. Because once you show, and it's like, one person loves it, one person hates it. Then if you've lost your sense of what's up, you're like, is this tacky? And then you're basing it off of, do I trust this person or do I trust this person? And push those away and like remember where it came from. You wrote the song yourself. Like, do you like it? You know, so it's like,
that's great.
And then, and that goes as far as what tours to accept, what deals to sign, you know, like, all I've done all of it wrong so many times. Like, I've signed the wrong deals, done the wrong tours, released the wrong songs because of other people's thoughts and opinions that I didn't align with. And then there's been times where I've been on the other side and I've pushed really hard for this, that, or the other thing, and turned out that like, if it wasn't for my thing, and turned out it was wrong. And it's like, yeah, you just really have to remember what the priority of opinion is, and it's you. And that's something I've brought in, that's something I brought into as being a producer. If I feel really strongly about something and the artist doesn't really agree, it's the artist's choice. Like, I would never try, I would express my opinion and then be like, but ultimately it's always up to you, and if you don't fuck with that, like, that's totally cool, we'll go this way, you know what I mean? Because that's my role as a producer, is to help their vision come to light and have my sound sort of accidentally fall into that. Yeah. You know, it's not the other way around.
That's great. We talked about challenges. I want to spin the dice, or, you know, I don't even know what analogy I'm using right now, but talking about challenges now, advice. What sort of advice or what advice would you give to aspiring producers, songwriters, and musicians trying to break into the industry today?
Well, something I'm really realizing is like, I had this pub meeting like a couple of weeks ago, and it was, you know, with this amazing A&R at this like really cool boutique company where they have, sorry, this sounds like I'm bragging. My point is that it's such a legit thing they said that really hit me and made me feel really good about the industry. You know, they have so many hits, this person. And they said to me, they were like, these days, nobody is too small, because tomorrow the biggest artist in the world could have came out of nowhere. And like, that is like how it works now. So yes, we never base who we work off of like the number of followers they have or the streams they have or anything. It's pure talent and like how good the songs are and their willingness to work hard and et cetera. Like, you know, all the things that come with it, but they're like, not, like these numbers don't really matter because tomorrow they could go from 5,000 to 500,000, you know? And it's like, that is the reality. And I thought I was like, wow, that's such a beautiful place to come to in the music industry, because what that means is this tool of TikTok, as frustrating and depressing as it can be, it also means that like this producer who's at the top of the game will literally talk to somebody with no followers and produce their whole album because they're talented. So what that means is it's almost like gone back to a place where talent and like kind of what we were talking about before, like the authentic skill and good songs comes before everything. And like, that's a really beautiful place to be in the industry. So my point is, for the advice is hone in on your craft. I hate when people say it. I'm like, what am I doing crafts? Like, what is, anyway, just make like a million songs and make the songs, just like get as good as you can for yourself, because other people will start to notice. And I wish I could give advice on TikTok and all those things, but like, honestly, in my experience, and this is just me and my experience, but like any success I've had is word of mouth. And some of it's come from online, things I've done, people reach out. So like, it's definitely like cool and important, but it all comes from people being like, oh, he did that thing. Like, I really love that. That's so good. You know what I mean? And I love this and this about it. And that would really be cool for this record. So like, let's get him to, you know, so it's really about like your work speaks for you. And I used to be like really insecure about how like the best music I had wasn't out yet. And I actually still have that. Like, I'm still like, oh, the thing I'm working on now, I wish this was out so that this person could hear it. You know what I mean? But like, you'll get, it happens in stages. And I forget how like good a lot of the songs that I've been a part of are, you know, like I listened back to a bunch of records recently that I've been a part of. And I'm like, firstly, these artists are just so talented. I'm so grateful to have been a part of it. And I'm really proud of the work that I did on it. And I need to like not discount that. So really, it's just about, long advice short, make as much music as physically possible and really focus on the quality of the work you're doing without it stumping the quantity. Because the thing about music is like, it is, quantity is quality as far as getting better at your thing goes. Like, it's much better to make 10 songs that are okay than like really focus on one song for like 6 months. Like, that song is just, it's only going to be as good as it is until you make 100 more songs.
Right.
And then that 101st song might be incredible, but like, you're not going to get there by working on one song constantly and forever. You know, like, you're just going to get stuck. You're going to get unmotivated. Just move on and just keep going. And just like make songs continuously and don't get stuck on a specific idea or song.
And how do you stay motivated to create the next song? Is it just drive? Is it just being always like, you know, mining, like you said, mining for that next idea? Is it because you have to pay rent? Is it, you know, is it like, obviously behind, like after all those things, like what keeps you motivated to just keep on going?
Well, I'm very grateful that in my career, it's like, I'm not the artist. So I'm facilitating a lot of other people's ideas and coming up with my own ideas for, how do I say this? Give me a sec. I need to think. I think schedules keep me very motivated because it has to get done. And I'm the type of person where I just have to get over the hump to be motivated. And so it's like, I just need to sit down, open the thing and get going, and then I'm good.
Right. But getting to the chair is the hardest part.
It's really difficult. And like, especially with ADHD, it's like, I find myself, I'm becoming more and more like, as time goes by, especially in this year with so many changes in my life, like I'm becoming more and more in tune with myself, and I'm realizing when I just need to like take a break and when I need to just push myself to start. Cause once I start, I'll be good. Whether it's like a social thing or if it's working or if it's whatever it is, like I'm learning myself more. But I would say some of it is necessity because of schedule. And I would say other things is just like enjoying your life and creating space for the music to come, because it's a fine balance between like sit down and do the work and create the space for it to come naturally. Because if I were an artist and I were writing my own record right now, like I would literally just have to like be going to the beach and be skateboarding and be showering a lot, because like that's where my ideas come.
Really clean. You know what I
mean? Yeah. I'd be clean. I'd be so clean and so dry. and like, you know what I mean? So it's like that's where my ideas really come. But that means nothing if I don't then force myself to sit down.
Yes.
Get a co-writer over, present them a bunch of ideas, and be like, I'm really excited about this one. Let's flesh this out and actually finish it. Like, you have to push yourself. And then I would also say I am like somebody who really hyper focuses. Like once I'm obsessed, like I'm glued, like I can't stop. So that's just like nature. I'm just lucky that I have that, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about maybe something that maybe some of the fans that are listening to this podcast, particularly your fans, maybe some of the Valley fans. I wanted to ask you about maybe some of the questions that maybe they have, you know, in regards to how has your music and how have your taste and how have your production evolved since your time with Valley? And what can fans expect from your future projects and future work coming up?
My sound has evolved. Honestly, it's weird. I'm happier than I've ever been, and I'm listening to more sad music than I ever have.
Sure.
I was like talking to a friend about this the other day, and it's really funny because I think what it is that I'm happy enough to listen to sad music now. Like I'm in such a good headspace with my life and my decisions and like just like everything I'm doing. Like I don't know. I'm just like, it's been a big growth year for me emotionally. And so now I have this like space to listen to all these
beautiful
sad songs. And it's like, I don't know. I'll just like cry to a sad song and feel really happy about it after. And I'm like, it's weird. So I think I've been, I don't know, like this Adrianna Lanker record.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
My life. And the Gracie Abrams record, like so good. And it's like a never ending list of like beautiful, sad acoustic music. And the whole Adrianna Lanker record was made on not vinyl. Sorry. It was like recorded on tape.
On tape.
and then mixed on an analog console and then mastered analog. So they didn't touch a computer till Spotify. So that's been like
insane. These days
it's crazy. And I've been so into organic things. And so right now I'm executive producing this Miko EP, and it's a lot of songs, and I'm really stoked. And it's very much not a slow, sad thing. And I actually find it really refreshing because, and maybe that's a part of it. Maybe it's like I'm making this like record where I'm making the drums smack, and there's like big electric guitars and synths and like this like hyper pop element to it, and like all these like really cool things. And then I go home and I just like, and don't get me wrong, literally love this record with all of my heart. But then I go home and I put my headphones on, and it's like this acoustic guitar through a tape machine, just like right here. And I can hear the piano over here, and it's like a different thing. And I feel like when I'm done this EP, I'm going to go make some other genre that has nothing to do with it. And then I'll be really into dance music while making that like acoustic EP. You know what I mean? I think there's a juxtaposition happening between my taste and what I'm making. And it's the first time I'm experiencing this in my life. Like it used to be like I found an artist, and then like Valley's music would like start to be influenced by it like immediately.
Right. Yes.
But I'm feeling like now it's like they're separate things, which is really cool. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Maybe we'll make an acoustic record soon. Who knows? I don't know.
Yes. Yeah. General question. What are some of the goals that you have for your music career in the next few years?
Well, one of them was to executive produce an album, which I'm did right off the bat, which is great. And really stoked about it. Miko and I have a really great relationship. It's like my little brother. I think there's certain teams. I mean, I can, there's some things I can't say.
Sure. Yeah. No, of course.
Like there's certain teams that I really admire that like I wrote down my goals for the year, and I'm like, I kind of want to get into like these crews and talk to these people and like on like a business level and networking level. And it's been happening. I'm eternally grateful for the opportunities that have come and the relationships that I've made already. It's like pinch me things.
Sure.
And then I would say I really, in the coming years, I want to make either a song or a record that like really changes culture. I know it's like a massive, goal.
No, sure.
But like, you know,
it's gotta be a goal first.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, every once in a while, those records come out that is just like, okay, the zeitgeist has changed. And like, there's a new sliver of genre that is happening right now, and it's something I've heard before, but something I've never heard before. And it's like I really like, as a producer, I want to be a part of developing artists that do that for music culture and worldly culture, like pop culture. So yeah, that's definitely like my biggest goal.
No, it's fantastic.
I try my best.
when you even just mentioned that, I think about, you know, the artists that are really pushing culture, just even over the last decade. You know, I think about you know, the Kendrick Lamars of the world, and the Billie Eilishes of the music world. Exactly. and especially those two artists in my sort of immediate references, but there's so many. But it's fun to see after like how they influence all the people, you know. Taylor's so definitely good. One of them too, you know. And I mean her for a few decades now, but that's so fun. And as a producer, I mean, yeah, that's a great goal to have, you know. I think at some point everybody sort of aspires there, you know. But maybe none of them, maybe it's only a handful of people that really write it down, you know?
Right. Yeah. So. Yeah. And honestly, like I realized when I started doing this like producer thing as like a full-time thing, there's so many paths for being a producer.
Yeah.
And in my head, I was like, oh, you make songs and then like, that's your job, whatever. But I'm realizing now it's like, I could chase every day for a number one pop song and just do pitch. I could do sync, which I'm not going to do, but like I could just do exclusively sync things. That's just not my bag. I'm not making fun of it. Sorry. That sounded so demeaning. And then, then there's like the guy who does sessions 5 days a week and just does a new artist every single day. Then there's the people who are developing artists. Then there's the people who like work with teams to co-produce on larger records. Like there's so many paths. Every like team that I'm talking to has a different sort of perspective on success and what their avenue is towards it. Yeah. And yeah, I think I would take, I mean, I'm saying this now without having the options actually on the table in front of me, but I think I would take like making a record that changes culture over like just a number one single that I've did with some big artist. You know what
For
I mean?
Sure. Yeah.
As much as like I have my dream artists that I would like die to be a part of making a single that goes number one, like obviously.
Yeah.
I think it's like there's just nothing as sick as like being a part of a development artist that like changes the world, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. Talking about producing albums, I want to head into the producer's game. This is the last segment of the podcast. I was excited for this one, Mike, because you know you're all about this stuff.
Yes.
Dreaming about some artists to work with, doing all that stuff. So basically, for those who are listening to the Cloud Machine podcast for the first time, we do a few games on this podcast. One of them is the producer's game, basically giving the chance to our guest a chance to produce their dream album. So I'm asking Mickey this week, basically to executive produce a record. So who the artist would be on the record, who the producers would be on the album, the songwriters, the band, the studio, and the city, as in they can be different, as in you can bring Abbey Road to New York, for instance. The decade and era that this album would live in, and what the album would be about. So we can take our time with this because I know it's going to be, you know, it's going to take a little bit of, it take a moment or two. But
that's so hard. Like, would I do modern or do I go back in time, you know?
Yeah. So this is the producer's game, everybody. Yeah. Let's start with decade or era. What do you got there?
Yeah. I think I would make a record in the 70s.
Okay.
I think 70s or 80s, maybe like late 70s.
Okay, great. And by the way, you can, it can be dead or alive. You can bring people from now back to the 70s. It's all good.
Okay. I would definitely make it late 70s because audio was like good enough for things to like smack and sound really good, but you still had access to like incredible engineers and big budgets and studios where like the gear was just like it sounds vintage, but it,
yes,
you know, it's not like, and then yeah, the 80s went a little too in one direction for me, but the late 70s, early 80s. So I think producers I would bring back there would be like Kid Harpoon.
Okay. Yeah.
I would bring Kid Harpoon, Rick Rubin, and myself to the late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah.
And we would produce a record for, this is a hot take because I'm actually not like the biggest fan in the world, but I think it would be so sick is, no, I'm not going to pick it. I really want to, do this justice. I want to make it real.
I know. Do you want to start with some other ones?
Sure. What are the other ones?
So let's do studio and city. Where would you want to record this? It can also be like, it doesn't need to be like a studio particularly. It could be like an environment.
Yeah. I think it would definitely be like rural UK.
Okay. Vibe. Yeah. Like castle vibes.
Yeah. Maybe like cottagey farm UK energy, I think.
Okay, yeah.
For the late 70s.
Yes.
The band, I think I know who the players would be too.
Okay, let's do that.
Ash Sohn would be the drummer.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
And then
I think I would get Callum to come play guitar.
Okay.
Our friend Callum.
Yeah.
I think I would get.
Got to get him on the pod. Just that's a note for myself.
Yeah, note for yourself. Got to get him on the pod. I would actually get Miko to come play bass because he actually writes some of the best bass lines I've ever heard.
Okay. that's awesome.
And then I think the artist would maybe be Dominic Fike.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Wow.
Like imagine Dominic Fike with... Oh, you know what? I can't say Dominic Fike because he did produce his last album with Kid Harpoon.
Oh, true.
Oh, Casey Musgraves. Oh my God.
Yeah, sure.
Casey Musgraves. Yeah, no, this is it. Casey Musgraves, late 70s. Kid Harpoon, me and Rick Rubin.
Yeah, Ash Sohn on drums.
Ash Sohn on drums, Miko on bass, Callum on guitar.
Any like maybe a little keys player, maybe a little, like a
keys player. Maybe Chase from Coin. He's a really good keys player.
There you go.
Yeah. And I think that's fantastic.
There you go. Yeah. I'll throw you this. Any songwriters?
Yes. For this situation, I would bring Baby Girl. I would bring Cam and Kiki from Baby Girl.
Yeah.
There's so many hit songwriters that I'm obsessed with, like that I love, but I don't know in this context if it's the right move.
Yeah.
But Baby Girl would definitely kill it. Maybe.
Thinking Casey, 70s, late 70s.
Yeah, like Stevie Nicks. For sure.
There you go.
Yeah, true. I guess I could do any song, not just my friends.
Unlimited budget. Yeah.
Yeah, true. What's her name? There was this girl from the 80s, 90s. I forget her name, but she wrote Don't Want to Miss a Thing. And she wrote, there was a point in history where she had every song in the top 10. She wrote every single one.
Wow.
Which is like all at once, all top 10 were her songs, which is just like insane. I'm pretty sure she has a website called I Write Songs or something.
Is this Diane Warren?
Yes. Diane Warren. I'll bring her.
Wild.
Maybe Daniel Wilson. He wrote Closing Time and like a bunch of really great songs.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I would say that. That would be like that would be an insane record.
Yeah. And what would the album be about if you had your say in it?
What would it be about?
Yeah. It was a concept record or, you know, maybe not.
I guess it would be like about my life and like all the things that have changed and my process and my emotions.
Sure.
Everything I'm going through. And
but in the late 70s.
But in the late 70s. Yeah, exactly.
Cool, man.
Crazy. That would be a good record.
What a great record. And that's actually how we conclude this 75th episode of
Wow.
The Cloud Machine Podcast. Yeah, we're at 75, baby.
Congrats. That's Thanks, amazing. Man.
Thank you. We're 3/4 of our way to 100, which is going to be in December. So,
that's amazing.
Man.
Thank you. Congrats for sticking with it. It's been killing it. I see it all the time. I see people posting about it.
Thanks.
I love it. And thank you for having me. I appreciate it. It's been really fun.
Yeah.
Really good question. Taught me a lot to think about.
I'm sure. Thank you. Yeah. Anything else to add before we head off?
No, I mean, just like, thank you for having me, and to the listeners, thank you for listening and caring about my thoughts and opinions. If anybody wants to send me the music they're working on, hit me up on Instagram.
There you go.
Nikki.Brandolino is like my handle for everything. Yeah. And thank you for listening. Thank you for hearing what I have to say.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
This week I've had the absolute pleasure of welcoming my friend Mickey Brandolino to the podcast. We spoke about industry insights, some of his perspectives on the current industry. We spoke about some challenges that he'd face and some advice that he has for some up-and-coming producers, musicians, and artists. We know that, you know, from his journey with Valley and now to his solo project, he's impacted so many people that he's worked with and some fans, maybe some of you that are listening right now, as he embarks on his new life project of his producer, solo producer's career. We're stoked to see him shine and now in LA. So for those who want to stay connected with Mickey and follow his latest updates, be sure to connect with him on Instagram. That's at Mickey Brandolino, MickeyBrandolino, BrandoLino. Also, for the people listening, don't forget to join our vibrant community on the 8th Network Discord. Whether you're a musician, industry professional, or music enthusiast, it's the perfect place to connect with like-minded individuals to gain insights into the music industry, peek behind the curtain, and access exclusive content at 8th. Visit the links in the episode description to join today. Thanks, everybody. Stay safe, and we will see you next week. Bye.